verse, but then also there are questions. Okay. So,
is there still a verse?
There's a verse.
Yeah,
there's a verse.
Just put launching pad.
Text 40, Canto 6, 6540.
Daksha's cursing out Narada Muni.
Maharaj, I'm sorry. I might get a call from Lakshmi Nishinga. He might be arriving in a half an hour.
Hey.
So I guess I have to split at one point. So
you have to split time to get on up here.
Him and his wife.
No, tell him to get on.
We have plans for him.
Nitham pumsam viragasyat tvaya kevalinamrsha manyase yad yupashamam sneha pasha sikrintanam.
Prajapati Daksha continued. If you think that simply awakening the sense of renunciation will detach one from the material world, I must say that unless full knowledge is awakened, simply changing dresses as you have done cannot possibly bring detachment. Third word. Prajapati Daksha was correct in stating that changing one's dress cannot detach one from the material world. The sannyasis of Kali Yuga who change their robes from white to saffron and then think they can do whatever they like are more abominable than materialistic grihasthas. This is not recommended anywhere. Prajapati Daksha was right in pointing out this defect, but he did not know that Narad Muni had aroused the spirit of renunciation in the Haryashvas and Shavalashvas through full knowledge. Such enlightened renunciation is desirable. One should enter the renounced order with full knowledge, jnana vairagya, for the perfection of life is possible for one who renounces this material world in that way. This elevated stage can be reached very easily, as supported by the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam 127. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yadohetukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. If one seriously engages in devotional service to Lord Vasudev, Gyan and Vairagya are automatically manifest in one's person. There's no doubt of this. Prajapati Daksha's accusation that Narada had not actually elevated his sons to the platform of knowledge was not factual. All the sons of Prajapati Daksha had first been raised to the platform of Gyan and had then automatically renounced this world. In summary, unless one's knowledge is awakened, renunciation cannot take place. For without elevated knowledge, one cannot give up attachment for material enjoyment. Om Jnanat Mirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nilitam Dhinga Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namah. Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Vayam Rupa Kadarma Yam Dhatadis Shukadarma. Just to the point, Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayavari. Before devotional service, not even simply cultivation of knowledge, but Narada Muni engaged these young men in devotional service so that automatically knowledge and detachment arose within them. The path of cultivating knowledge is long and laborious. The path of devotional service is easy and quick, and automatically knowledge and renunciation follow. So that we see in our Krishna consciousness movement, that people who are attached to all sorts of things, to a materialistic way of life, chant Hare Krishna and give up so many things that materialists can't live without. The devotees lose interest in those things or they can move. Nasty. Maybe rather than speak at length, we'll see what kind of questions there are. Since we heard there are some.
Maharaj, nowadays, even senior grihasthas within our movement will sometimes make a statement that, well, you know, so many brahmacharis have changed ashrams. Is it really even necessary to have a brahmachari ashram nowadays?
Is it really necessary? Since so many brahmacharis become grihasthas, is it necessary to have, it doesn't mean the brahmachari ashram is like a thing of the past, like an appendix or something that you don't really need anymore. a vestigial ashram. That's really a poor argument. Even if you think that 100% of the brahmacharis are going to become grihasthas, you still need a brahmachari ashram. Otherwise, how are you going to get decent grihasthas? If they've all just been trained as little sense gratifiers, or if they've never had systematic training in knowledge and renunciation, what kind of grihasthas are they going to be? Self-controlled, Krishna conscious, responsible, dutiful, your mind's on higher things, or something else. It's not so easy to be a grihastha. To be a grihamedi is easy as pie. But to be a grihastha requires self-control. It requires, you have to navigate through all that heavy material association, material engagement, the proximity of one's wife. And you're going to do that without any training in knowledge, renunciation, and devotional service, just kind of wing it? That's really a bad proposal. If you think that your sons are all going to become grihasthas, make sure they get good brahmachari training. Practical. And that's apart from the mythological idea that, up until 1980-something, people could become brahmacharis, but then a curtain fell over the earth, and then brahmacharis could no longer. They became like dinosaurs. Some tectonic shift or global warming or something. Where brahmacharis could no longer. Rather. Even if we think, whatever we think about that, now is the time for the grihasthas to show their true stuff and become vanaprasthas. Maybe no need to talk about whether people can still become brahmacharis. Let them worry about that. But for you, what's your age now? You're not going to stay a grihastha for the rest of your life, are you? So, if you really want to revitalize your life, if you really want to get like a second wind in devotional service, if you really want to taste freedom and happiness, then come join the happy brahmacharis by advancing toward the vanaprastha ashram. That's our message.
So recently in the past 6 months or so, we experienced some brahmacharis who had been brahmacharis for quite a long time who did change ashram.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do, what can younger brahmacharis do, what are the best practices, brahmacharya, best practices that you,
best practices.
Where should we put our money here?
That's practice number one, chant Hare Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave, of course, 64 best practices, of which five are the most prominent. Sadhu Sangha, to associate with devotees. For brahmacharis, that especially means associate with other brahmacharis. Brahmacharis are recommended. Of course, we associate with everyone, but especially the brahmacharis are recommended to associate with the other brahmacharis. If we spend our time hanging out at the homes of grihasthas and eating nicely and being pampered and so on, that's not very good. But if we associate with the brahmacharis, you know, that develops esprit de corps and spiritual strength. But apart from that, the brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, anyone, we associate with the devotees, sadhu sangha, and Krishna seva, serving the deity, being engaged in the service of Krishna. And Bhagavata, hearing Srimad Bhagavata. I know early in my spiritual life, I had the good fortune to be editing the books. Before, the books were really out there. In the beginning, we only had First Canto, TLC. We only had a very small number of books. And I was editing Third Canto with such stuff as Kapil Dev's instructions about adverse fruitive activities. So, what a godsend. You know, while other people were kind of thinking, well, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I? No, I was getting Kapil Dev's instructions. I shouldn't. So, whenever I go to the householder communities, it's so typical that I'll get one of these heavy renunciation verses, or, oh my Lord, because I am struggling against the insurmountable currents of materialistic life and family affairs. Or, you know, I always get one of those verses. Why? Because the book's stacked in my favor. Right, wherever you turn, you get these enlightening instructions. And it's not just, you know, stay a brahmacharya, but it's, you know, what are the reasons? What are the alternatives, and where do the alternatives, what are the pros and cons? And you know, you get knowledge. You get transcendental knowledge, by which your intelligence gets strengthened, and rather than saying, oh, I don't know, you have some, the intelligence has ammunition, has clear picture of the territory, so that we're not bewildered by some attractive picture of material life. So, Bhagavatam. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam among the devotees. And Nam, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. One time in Boston, actually, I've told the story with an anonymous person, but actually the person was Pradyumna. Pradyumna came to, Prabhupada was staying in a house in Boston, just near the little storefront temple that they used to have. And I'd just been initiated, and somehow I was Prabhupada's assistant servant and cook for a couple of weeks. So I was also in that house. And Pradyumna came to see Srila Prabhupada, and they had some private discussion. And then I guess Pradyumna was leaving. Anyway, the Prabhupada said so. It was clear that the topic was that Pradyumna was thinking about getting married. He was brahmachari at that time. And so he said, so Jayadvaita, you would also like to get married? And I said, no, Srila Prabhupada. I've heard too much about it from the devotees, and I'm not interested. I was like, you're chanting Hare Krishna and feeling happy. You're chanting Hare Krishna feeling. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna feeling happy, what do you need a wife for? what's the plus? If you're already happy and you're already chanting Hare Krishna, what does marriage add to the equation? Now you're going to be more happy? Maybe. But anyway, by chanting Hare Krishna, we're already happy. So what is the need? What is the need? So Prabhupada said, that's how I took it, that you're chanting Hare Krishna and feeling happy. That's, in one sense, our greatest protection. If we're happy by chanting the holy name, if we're happy by devotional service, if we're happy by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, if we're happy by associating with the devotees, why do we have to look for happiness in anything else? And what happiness are you going to, what are you going to offer me? Yam labdva chapram labham manyate nadikam tata. In sixth chapter, that when one gets the transcendental happiness of Krishna consciousness, you think there's nothing better than this. Sukham va yariva dukkam guruna bibi chalita. The greatest happiness or the greatest distress is not going to pull him away from that happiness. He's got superior happiness, so he's just not interested. And we see that, you know, young men, and even in our Sankirtan parties, you know, there are beautiful young girls and so on. And the devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, they're happy, they're not, you know, doing the mating games that would preoccupy young boys and girls. Because they're chanting Hare Krishna and feeling happy. Chanting Hare Krishna and feeling happy. So that's a big thing. Chant Hare Krishna and feel happy. And what's Prabhupada's like constant instruction? Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Just in that, you know, for chanting Hare Krishna and being happy, what else do we have to do? So Sadhu Sangha Krishna, Seva Bhagavata Nam, and Brajabas, to live in Vrindavan or the Bhakti Center. A place that's as good as Vrindavan. A place where there's Krishna consciousness. These five things. Any one of them, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is sufficient. And our schedule is arranged, our life is arranged, we should arrange our life in such a way that this is what we're doing all the time. We're chanting Hare Krishna, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we're speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, we're associating with the devotees, serving the deity. We're always busy. Prabhupada gave that formula that if, like a glass that's full of milk, there's no place for ink to enter. It's full. So if we're always busy, always full, always engaged in Krishna consciousness, then there's no space for Maya to come in and say, well, you're not doing anything, why don't you spend some time with me? We're busy, sorry. Because I heard us talk. Yeah, okay, but I'm busy.
Could you share some best practices for chanting Hare Krishna with taste? Or just getting a taste for
chanting? I wish. First best practice is to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That probably with numerical strength, chant 16 rounds every day. Get up early in the morning, attend the Mangalark, and so on. Apart from that, we get taste by avoiding 10 offenses. And my favorite instruction from Prabhupada, I heard from one devotee named Uttama Shloka, not the Uttama Shloka from Chicago.
Not Chicago, yeah.
There was another Uttama Shloka who was German,
mm-hmm.
Long time ago. And he passed through New York. And he related to us that Prabhupada had said, just try to hear yourself chant attentively. No, just try to hear yourself chant sincerely.
Mm.
Just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. That's, in a nutshell, the whole thing. It's like, you know, a loop, a closed,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
closed circle, where the mind is busy, where you're busy trying to chant sincerely, and your ear is busy trying to hear yourself chant sincerely. That's the key to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very good at it, but that's. At least that's the best practice. And there's, you know, things that we hear, you know, always have a good place for chanting, a regular time for chanting, avoid yip yap and other things while you're chanting. Try and set things up in such a way that you can just chant and not have to be. And the other stuff can wait. You know, whatever else we'd have to do. Put on hold.
I'm wondering, because sometimes people will remain brahmacharya for some time and then maybe decide to step out of the ashram, and it seems sometimes that it's not necessarily like a specific desire to like get married, or like I want a family life with a particular woman or girl. Sometimes it just seems that there's a loss of enthusiasm to be brahmacharya. There's just like there's not really any place I want to go specifically, but like there's like doing everything, and then like an enthusiasm just kind of drops. So I'm wondering, and it can be like disheartening. Just you fear like, okay, at a certain point I'm gonna get there. Like I'm just doing everything I'm doing, and then there's gonna be this point where I'm just gonna lose enthusiasm like that person.
Yeah,
so
keep that fear. Keep that fear. Should always be afraid of Maya. That if I don't carefully engage in the devotional practices, then I may lose my enthusiasm. Utsaha. Rupa Goswami says first thing is to have enthusiasm, because that's what keeps everything going. Utsaha nishchaya tarya. So Prabhupada noted that as one of the signs of weakness in Krishna consciousness. At one point he was like seeing that in the temples there was a lack of enthusiasm. You know, people were not so eager to get up in the morning, or they were not so eager to do. And, you know, and Prabhupada saw that, his lack of enthusiasm. And he indicated that this was the devotees were not strictly following, not chanting their rounds, not getting up early in the morning. Because sadhana generates enthusiasm. Sadhana, you know, sadhana is like, you have to do it. That's sadhana, right? The vaidhi. Vaidhi sadhana means you have to do it. But the result of you have to do it is that by doing it, you develop enthusiasm. You get a taste for it, and as long as you continue that sadhana, your taste continues to grow. That example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you keep watering and the plant keeps growing. So when does the enthusiasm start to go? When we start to neglect, when we start to coast, when we start to think, well, you know, 14 rounds, 16 rounds, and, you know, Mangalarti, no Mangalarti, you know, a few days off, and, you know, just sort of become negligent. Don't read, don't chant, don't, you know, just kind of taper off. So then it snowballs, you know, more, or it stagnates, really. It's not really snowballing, mm-hmm. it's stagnation. So that leads to this loss of enthusiasm. Or getting involved in activities of sense gratification. It's described in the fourth canon. It's like having reeds on the side of a pond that suck up the water in the pond. So if we don't maintain material attachments while chanting Hare Krishna. If we try to cultivate both, then we can get pulled away. So it's a process of continuous detachment, continuous renunciation, continuous choice. I am going to chant Hare Krishna. I'm not going to, you know, waste my time with Maya. That means keeping good association, because good association keeps enthusiasm going. And not only association with devotees, but with other devotees who are enthusiastic. I mean, not every, you know, you can find, we know there are people who drift together because they have a commonality in being weak. That's not really what you want to do. If we're strong or if we're weak, we should want to associate with those who are strong, because their enthusiasm will rub off on us, or we'll have mutual enthusiasm. So you want to keep that enthusiasm going. Enthusiasm is like a great engine that keeps things moving. And this is the material world. Whenever we're negligent, then, you know, things can deteriorate. even in business, you know, if you don't keep your eye on the money, if you don't keep your eye on the what the employees are doing, if you don't keep your eye on the business, you know, things deteriorate. You always have to keep it going. And another thing Prabhupada said in that connection is that the devotee, he was advising one of our managers, there should always be some new challenge. It shouldn't be that we're kind of like, we get in the groove and we stay in the groove and we just keep going in the groove. That's not good enough. It should be okay, you're in the groove, let's see a higher groove. Always a new challenge, always so that you have to strive a little more. Like if we would distribute, you know, a huge number of books, Prabhupada would say, this is very good, now double it. Or Prabhupada had that book marathon, 17 books. Or Prabhupada, you know, so many ways to do something that would be very difficult. Still possible, but that would require that everybody goes, you know, so that nobody has any time to think about. Like when we were doing those 17 books, we didn't have time to think about, you know, I was thinking maybe I should get married. Married, you know. You can't even think about getting married. You have to think about, they may wake me up at any minute because I have to proofread something or I have to run something through the typesetter or I have to do this or that. Nobody had any time for thinking, no leisure time, no idle time. So that's a very good thing, no idle time. It means always there's more that we have to do. There's more service. Prabhupada wrote to Satsuri Maharaj one time, it's very good that you want to be overburdened with service. That kind of overburden. Not so that you're going to die, but so that you really have no time for anything other than devotional service. It's just not enough hours in the day for Maya. You know, it's just like that was Haridas Thakur's problem, you know. Somehow I couldn't chant my rounds. It's just couldn't get them done. So I, you know, I'd like to, but I just don't have time for you. You have to come back tomorrow. So if we don't have time for her, well, then, you know, it's her tough luck. We should always be busy in Krishna consciousness so that we just don't have time. Or can't, you know, when you're busy, sorry, I can't even think about it, whatever it is. Sometimes you're so busy you can't even think about eating something. You know, come back later, you know, I'm just busy. So it should be like that with Maya, you know, come back later, and by the time she comes back, you've already died and gone back to Godhead. Is that okay? Sir?
Why did Prabhupada wrote so many books if by performing the ocean service we develop knowledge and renunciation?
Why did Prabhupada write so many books if just by devotional service you develop knowledge and renunciation? Books are part of devotional service. Devotional service is not just some sentiment. It's not just some feeling. It's not that. Devotional service includes shastric study. This is not the gyan of the material world or the gyan of the gyanis that we talk about, the materialistic gyanis. These books are the science of Krishna, and the science of Krishna is not outside of devotional service, it's right at the core of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his highest ecstasy, was tasting these books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya, other writings. So Prabhupada's giving us, he's giving us Krishna. The book is Krishna himself. The book is the glories of Krishna. We want to know about Krishna. Here's Krishna. Or in practical terms, what are the dangers of the material world? How are things related to Krishna? If we want to see things clearly, that's also part of devotional service. And that's included in the books. Okay. Devotional service is not just sentiment, not just a feeling. Yeah.
Raj, you were speaking of being happy in devotional service. So often I feel happy in devotional service, but sometimes when I kind of really examine where I'm at and how far I have to go, I become a little discouraged. I see the material so many material desires are in the mind. So how do we maintain just being like happy all the time, but at the same time we're seeing kind of how far we are and how...
Well, it's not this sort of sappy happy. You know, like or West Coast. Yeah, man, I'm just happy all the time. It's not that kind of happy, a sort of superficial, painted on happiness. Even sometimes it's described that that this feeling of inadequacy or discouragement in devotional service is another kind of ecstasy. Rupa Goswami says just that one shouldn't overindulge in that. And we get to these devotees, well, I'm so fallen. Prabhu, could you mop the kitchen floor? Prabhu, I'm just too fallen. Prabhu, you know, I've noticed that you're not chanting your rounds, it seems. Yeah, Prabhu, I'm just so fallen. You know, then it becomes overindulgence. When it becomes like an excuse for not serving, then it's too much. And there's a warning. I think it's in Narada Bhakti Sutra or Prayers of King Kulasekhar. One shouldn't overindulge in that. But otherwise, the sense that I'm inadequate is actually favorable to devotional service. Because then the next thing is, well, if I'm inadequate, what do I have to do? Well, I have to chant Hare Krishna. I have to beg Krishna for mercy. I have to go out and do something so that I can use the spiritual master. I have to, you know. And then you become happy. And it becomes a deeper happiness or a stronger happiness because it's based on a deeper experience of reality. It's not based on, yeah, you know, I'm always in ecstasy, you know, until the first wind hits him and he falls over like a tree. It's deep-rooted happiness because it has introspection, it has application of what we read in the books to our own lives. Okay.
All right, I was wondering if one has like creative inclinations, artistic inclinations, how do we dovetail that into the ashram life without being a disturbance to move the ashram or one's own development as a brahmachari?
Without it being a disturbance. Well, don't sing while everyone's sleeping.
You hit the nail on the head, Marash.
But there are all sorts of ways to use our creative talents in Krishna's service. You can paint for Krishna, you can write for Krishna, you can publish for Krishna, you can design things for Krishna, you can develop, you know, there's other kinds of creativity, creative strategies for spreading Krishna consciousness. Speaking for Krishna involves creativity. There's so many different ways that are creative people. And we're sort of, that needs to be encouraged. It's not just that we, what are you doing? Well, same thing that, you know, when I was a brahmachari in Chicago, and this is what they always do, so that's what I'm doing. You know, we observe, for example, that I think some of the temples no longer have Sunday love feasts. I hear you have a vegetarian dinner, because love feasts really were like a winning idea back in maybe 1965 or 68. Love feasts may not quite be the order of the day. So, you know, so it involves, well, let me think about that again. Is a love feast still what's going to attract people? Is our audience, you know, looking for a love feast? Or maybe a vegetarian dinner would be more like it, or maybe something else. After a while we say, well, vegetarian dinner, everybody's a vegetarian, or, you know, vegetarian dinners are a dime a dozen or whatever, and so we have some other idea. It's not that everything gets frozen in the 1960s, because that's when the Hare Krishna movement got started, and nobody can have a new idea. There are some things that, you know, you don't touch them, they stay the way they are, because those are core understandings or core principles. We don't say, well, you know, 16 rounds may have been good in the 1960s, but come on, we're in the year, not like that. But there's a lot of other stuff which is just packaging. and where you have all the room in the world for creativity. Book distributors find newer and more creative ways to distribute books. You look at smart boxes. We didn't have smart boxes in the 1960s. Weekend warriors. All sorts of, you know, all you do is you sit down and you say, well, you know, given circumstances, what'll work? And you come up with a new idea or a new thing to say to people or a new program. So that's creativity. So Prabhupada liked it. He said he picked out the Americans as having a kind of entrepreneurial, creative spirit. And he liked to see that used in Krishna service. So you should do that. Don't just get, don't feel oppressed by the dinosaurs from the 1960s and 1970s who still stomp the earth.
Stomp out all life.
Stomping out, you know, they'll become extinct anyway. And anyway, there's room for, we want to see the Krishna consciousness movement grow and expand in new ways. And so that demands actually a creative, renewed creative process. You'll take over some of the old institutions and revitalize them. There are publications that are ready for revitalization. There are programs that are ready for revitalization. There are temples all over the place that are ready for revitalization. And the same place with a different approach becomes a whole new ballgame, a whole new story. All it needed was just a different vision. Just a different vision, and everything turns around. And we've seen that sometimes. Pune is a good example. Our Pune temple in Maharashtra, where it was, I mean, I could tell you, it was the most, to say that it was the pits is an insult to the pits. It was really nothing. And Radhanath Maharaj got involved and put a couple of his people in and it started getting better and started getting better. And then Radhe Shyam got in there. Those of you who know Radhe Shyam, he's just, you know, super creative person.
He was here.
Huh?
He was here.
He was here. So a very creative person, always thinking about how to spread Krishna consciousness, full of new ideas. Broke a few rules here and there, broke a few, you got to do it this way. And, you know, they're growing huge. So just, they don't have room for all the people who want to join. They don't have, really huge, just huge, hugely successful programs. Creativity. Creativity with orthodoxy. It's both things. Prabhupada's formula was new wine, old wine in a new bottle. Mm-hmm. You keep the wine the same, but the bottle you can change. Old wine in a new bottle. That was Prabhupada's. So you can do that. Don't change the wine. But the bottle, have fun. What else? Mm-hmm.
Right, in a traditional brahmachari ashram back in the day, brahmacharis would live directly under the guidance of the guru, where the guru would watch over them carefully and monitor them. And so now, of course, you know, the gurus can be thousands of miles away. So how does one go about maintaining a relationship, like a real personal relationship with their guru, that being so far away? Maybe once a year.
By instructions. Prabhupada said that two things are there, the vani and the vaku, the instruction and the physical form. Physical form may sometimes be there and sometimes not, but the spiritual master is always present by his instructions. So in the absence of the physical, in the physical absence of the spiritual master, then his instructions are there as the life and soul of the disciple. Prabhupada himself said he didn't have that much physical association with his Guru Maharaj. There were others who had practically constant association. And yet Prabhupada was the one who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Not by the strength of all that physical company, but by the strength of dedication to the sound, to the instructions. Apart from that, Prabhupada actually trained us to see our senior devotees and temple presidents as representatives of the spiritual master. This is now, you know, like out of style. It's like, oh, you know, give me a break. But this was this was what Prabhupada inculcated in us. He even, you know, didn't want to hear from, you know, this guy, that guy, the other. You know, ask your GBC men, ask your temple president. It's like, why are you bothering me with this? It is for this reason I have created GBC men and temple presidents. He regarded these devotees as his representatives and wanted them to serve as his representatives for guiding the devotees. That's practical. And we would take it like that, that, you know, well, our spiritual master wants us to follow the instructions of such and such. Even if we don't always agree with the instructions, we know that the temple president's not as perfect, we might say, as the spiritual master himself, not as accomplished. But still, we have that sense that by following the instructions of the higher authorities, we're pleasing the spiritual master, we're carrying out the spiritual master's order. The Prabhupada gave us that kind of training.
Mm-hmm. Will that help us actually get to personally know the spiritual master?
Can we get a little louder?
Will that help us really get to know the spiritual master? Yes, we'll see a representative, but actually get to know the person, the spiritual master, so we can have a more personal relationship, or is that just not
possible? If you get the physical association of the spiritual master, that's very nice. We don't discount it and say, oh, what's the use? But of the two, the sound is more important. So everything is revealed to the person who serves the sound. You won't be like missing something. Well, I only got to serve the sound. I never got this physical. No. I think some of our best devotees practically never met Prabhupada, or hardly. Or some of our best devotees now, you know, they hardly get any association. But it's by service to the sound. The sound is, that's our philosophy, the sound is transcendental. The spiritual master is present by sound. Krishna is present by sound. And by serving sound, we get everything. And when we got the opportunity for personal, physical association, or just by hearing, that's also another way. You know, I wasn't there, but I heard. We hear, therefore everyone likes to hear, you know, what we call Prabhupada pastimes. Prabhupada stories, because they're instructive. You know, what did Prabhupada do in such and such a circumstance? And you weren't there, but you got to hear the description, the realizations of the person who were there. So you learned through their experience. That's also there.
If at the end, what pleased the spiritual master is to follow the authorities.
What pleases the spiritual master is to follow the authorities.
I am not finished with the question.
Okay.
Is there any need to choose one spiritual master than one other?
Excuse me?
Is there any need to choose one spiritual
is there
master
any
or another?
Need to choose one spiritual master over another? Well, you do have to choose one over another because you can only have one.
Yes,
for initiation, there's only one. But then the question is, like, does it make a difference? Can I just pick any one because I'm just going to serve the same authority anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah. From one angle of vision, if we serve one bona fide spiritual master or we serve another bona fide spiritual master, it's the same. You make one choice, the person next to you makes another choice, It's not that, well, sorry, you know, you kind of made the second class choice. But, you know, maybe you'll still make it. I made the first class choice, of course. It's not that. But anyone who chooses a bona fide spiritual master will make progress. Now, how am I going to choose? Sometimes people say, well, you know, I can't choose. From one angle, if you have too many good choices, that's a terrible problem, isn't it? You know, we wish we all had such problems all the time, you know, that we had all of my choices were too good. But apart from that, we see, the question is, how do we choose? We see where we have special confidence, where we get inspiration, where we think, yes, this person is particularly competent, I have faith in the words of this person, I can surrender to this person's instructions. I'm inspired by this person's instructions and example. Where you get, and also I get some reciprocation. Because sometimes you may be inspired and it just doesn't, you don't get anything back. I'm really inspired to become my disciple. Yeah, but okay, I will. And then somebody else, you know, reciprocates with you, recognizes. Sometimes someone even recognizes that here's somebody, you know, they're kind of overlooking, but he's a good guy. So where you get some inspiration and some, where you have confidence, and then where you get some reciprocation also. That's where we'll naturally tend to go.
Okay.
Sometimes a spiritual master could test you, right, by neglecting you.
Sometimes a spiritual master may test you by neglecting you. Yes, that's also there.
I give you that reciprocation initially.
Yeah, that may sometimes be there. Or sometimes it's not a test, he's genuinely... has other priorities, whatever. Hard for me to encourage people to, you know, just see it all as a test and thank God no matter what, because I don't want to do that.
Topic of a spiritual master, let's say the discipline succession, I've often wondered, we say that in the spiritual world, we're still serving our spiritual master. Now, is it such that, you know, is, like, the discipline succession is intact in the spiritual world, that, like,
everyone's there.
Everyone's there, but, like, is it, like, servant of the servant, like, directly, like, a link, like, a line, you know, like...
Prabhupada said it's
like side by side or something like this.
Of course, presence in the spiritual world is perfection. The stage of training and the stage of perfection are distinct. And still there's always an eternal relationship between spiritual master and disciple. Something like the accomplished musician, the professional virtuoso musician still is indebted to to his first grade music teacher. Or what to speak of the professor who trained him in music. Beyond that, I can't say very much because I've never been to the spiritual world, so it's hard for me to give you a report. But the relationship is eternal. Various esoteric things that could be discussed, but there's no need to discuss them at this point. Something else? do the authorities say? Do we go a little longer? Do we stop? Do we... Any more questions? There's a question.
I just reminded this story of Daksha we just read. And it's interesting because Śrīla Prabhupāda, he's giving argument to Narada Muni that those boys, they still did not enjoy sense gratification enough, therefore they may fall down in the future because they will be attracted to sense gratification. And I just reminded Prabhupāda was saying that this argument is actually bogus, because if you enjoy more sense gratification, it's like giving fuel to the fire.
Yeah, Daksha's argument is, you know, let them first enjoy sense gratification, and then when they're full with it, then they'll become renounced. If that philosophy were really so great, New York City would be like renunciation session. Right? They'd all say, oh, I've had it with sense gratification. I've pigged out so much. You know, I'll never do that again. But no. It's always, you know, I guess I, you know, it was the wrong girl, or you know, it was only two drinks instead of three, or, you know, whatever it was, so that it didn't quite click in. But, you know, if I do it this way or I do it that way, you know, if I change my... If I change my Calvin Kleins for something else or whatever it is, then, and even, you know, at the age of, in their 60s and 70s, they're still at it. I have the statistics actually on my laptop. I won't entertain you with them this evening, because it'll take a few minutes to find. But, you know, the persistence, you could say dogged persistence, of our grandparents into their 60s and 70s and even 80s, they were still trying to get something out of sexual intercourse. You know, what are they going to get? You know, and with you read about some of the medical things. You know, there's, apart from Viagra, which is, you know, the latest greatest, there's like pumps and, you know, all sorts of other things to, you know, try and give you some semblance of capability in your old age. And talk about chewing the chew. Again and again. And, you know, and the, when is renunciation going to kick in? It never does. Tripyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhaja. Even though it causes so much misery, actually, still, they're scratching kandu tiba. Kandu yanena kariyori bhaduka. They're scratching and scratching. The itch just becomes bigger. It doesn't say, okay, thank you, now I'm done. So therefore, one is advised from the very beginning, you know, just tolerate. What is that? Prakshayira vimokshana kama krotod pabambega sayupta sasukhi nana. Same thing happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't remember the beginning of that verse. Prakshayira shotum prakshayira vimokshana. That's the beginning. Something, yes, so totally proxy. Did somebody have a Bhagavad Gita with a verse index? Kama krodhod bhavam vegam.
Shaknoti Haiva
Yashodham. Shaknoti Haiva Yashodham Prakshanya. Thank you.
Yes.
Shaknoti, one who is able. Read.
Praksarira Vimokshanat Kamakroda Bhavam Vegam Sayukta Sasukinaraha.
Translation.
Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world.
He's happy. What's the purport?
Purport. If one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, and thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger.
Apply Krishna consciousness. Tolerate. That's the message we're giving. Just tolerate. There will always be some agitation. There will always be some, you know, proposition from why wouldn't you like to? And all right, we just have to. That's the cost of living in this material world. But we have to put up with some agitation. Just as, you know, there's an itch. But you have to, if we tolerate it, that we work out better than scratching. We know where scratching is going to lead. So, you know, forget it. Let me tolerate it. So, in that spirit, the kama, krodha, anger, and, you know, what do we get from just getting angry? You know, so we get in trouble, we get... So, all right. You know, we just tolerate. What can we do? And then you come out ahead. You come out ahead, peaceful, and carry on. It's supposed to be the end of the world. It goes away. Anger, you know, comes like, and 5 minutes later, it's like, you know, yeah, that was stupid. You know, the guy was an idiot. Yeah, I will. You know, but if you'd acted on at the time, you would have punched him out. And you know, been dragged away by the police, and, you know, and karma the same way, you know. If not attended to, it goes away. It comes back, but then again, if it's not attended to, it goes away. You know, it keeps checking in. Interested yet? No, thanks. Okay. Kind of like phone solicitations, you know. It's just something, if you have a telephone, you have to put up with. But it doesn't mean you have to, really, you know, 5% extra. No. After a while, yeah, I do realize I could get a higher credit card rate, you know, higher interest rate. But thank you, you know. It's just something you put up with and say, you know. We have to tolerate. Lust comes and then it goes. Unless we start feeding it, unless we, you know, same thing. You know, you answer one. That's why the advice from people in the anti-spam people, never answer one of those emails. You answer one of those emails and you're in for eternal email from whoever it was, because they know that you're there. That's the first thing. They didn't know it was, you know, this is a blank address, has this been unused for 20 years? Now they got an answer, they know that you're there. You go on, you went from the C list to the B list. And, you know, well, that's okay, he took it like a fish, it took a nibble. Let's see if we can make it a bite. So, you know, thank you, not interested. Busy. No, having a good time right now. Too busy. Thanks. Bye. You know, kama, krodha, bhavam. Just tolerate. We have better things to do. often attend to common good.
Can I still do this topic?
Can you do what?
One point to this topic. Which
if you speak louder, otherwise I'm going to get angry.
So this is story of Daksha and Hari Ashwas and Saur Ashwas, but later we read in Bhagavatam also story of Maharaj Jayati, who wanted to enjoy sense gratification. He got cursed by Shukracharya, and that now he is asking his sons to take his old age so that he can enjoy. And Yadu is giving argument actually that I cannot do it because I have to now enjoy so that I can later take sannyas.
Yeah.
So I was thinking how to understand this in connection to which we just discussed. It seems to be like counter.
There was a particular reason for that. By his so-called enjoyment, he'd become the head of the Yadu dynasty and Krishna would appear. That's the real enjoyment. Otherwise, that's the Varnashram idea, that all right, let them enjoy, you know, at a young age. But then, I mean, there's the whole picture, brahmachari life, so that they really get the idea of what life is for, learn how to control the mind, learn how to control the senses. Then, okay, if they really want sense gratification, you know, do it while the time is there for doing it. And then, okay, show's over, time to close down the circus, put away the tents, pack up the van. Yeah, and get on with the more important business. But one can think, well, if we're going to pack up the van anyway, why unpack it to begin with?
I've had this question all the time. I've asked it many times, but like it makes sense to me for Grihamedi to have that approach. That like, okay, so you go into the Grihas, the ashram, to enjoy, and then later on you recognize that you know, this has to stop. That there's a higher calling, and this is not going to sustain my happiness. But for Grihastha, I don't really understand what the enjoyment is, because
I don't understand what the happiness is for the Grihamedi either.
Well, it's like, I mean, at least, you know, you can pursue all of your urges, but when you're a Grihastha, that none of that is there. I mean, you're supposed to be a brahmachari anyway. So
yeah, this discussion was had between Prabhupada and Hayagriva.
Yeah, right.
Right? You know, if you only have sex once a month, you know, what's the use? But very good.
But it almost seems like, I guess the danger is that it seems that Grihamedi ashram is more...
There's no Grihamedi ashram.
Yeah, right.
No,
But how are you going to burn out that... If somebody's in a position where they're needing that kind of mercy... of being allowed to let their senses flail around.
Well, the idea is this, that someone's, in spite of brahmacharya training, he feels too much inconvenience without family association. So he said, all right, we'll give you a spot where things are a little looser, where things are, you know, you've got some concession, and you carry on with your Krishna consciousness that way. So it's not meant to be the path of pigging out, you know, eat till you puke. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's okay if you need a little more space, if you need a little, some concession, we'll give you that. In exchange for extra hassle. It's not, we say, a license. The householder life is a license for sense gratification. Licenses aren't free. Licenses aren't free. I met a guy at the train station the other day. He was kind of a down and out guy, and he was saying how he's doing, you know, he's not married, but still he has to pay child support. You know, so he's like not getting any of the benefits of being married, but he has to or he has all the trouble, or at least a lot of the trouble, because he has to pay child support. So his comment on having children was expensive habit. Expensive habit. So householder life is, among other things, expensive. Your brahmachari life is cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it's practically free. But householder life is expensive. And because of the expense, you have to work. And because of the work, you know, is that really what we want to do with our lives? Not really. Nobody says, I'd really like to become a grihastha so that I could work 9 to 5. I'd really like to become a grihastha so that I can have my wife charge things to my credit card and I can pay 24% interest. I'd really like to become a grihastha so that I can own my own home and pay for it for the next 25 years. Nobody really says that. But these are the, you can say the hidden costs on the deal. That the overhead is considerable. That's just the financial overhead. There's the emotional overhead, and I'm not happy, and you know all of that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of expense involved, emotional expense, financial expense, time. You know, I'd like to have time for, but even we hear, you know, I don't even get time to chant my rounds. And the tendency to become rather, if not overwhelmed, to always have to contend with the forces of material existence and keep them at bay, as it were. It's a lot more of it's a bigger trick to manage. There are those who've managed it exceedingly well. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the ideal example. That in spite of having a large family, wife, duties for the as a magistrate and so on, he was undisturbed and focused on his real business. So it can be done. It's not. Can be done, and the examples are there. But it's a bigger trick than just chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deities, distributing books, going out preaching, living a happy life with the brahmacharis. Friends are less expensive than wives. And people sometimes get married for companionship. Friends are so much cheaper as companions. That was a diversion. The original question was.
I think you answered it.
I did.
It seems like that. The point is to like you get a little more freedom.
You get a little more.
That's
freedom.
Like the perk.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's meant to accommodate everyone. So if you can. If you can live without it, by all means live without it. If it's too much, then all right, accept it. But use your brahmachari training to keep things in proportion, to keep things in check, to control the mind and senses, and to arrange things in such a way that it's really focused on spiritual life. And we see some of my godbrothers are really nice grihasthas. You know, they're always engaged in some spiritual activity. You see how they're firmly situated in spiritual life, and they're always doing something for cultivating Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness. So it's wonderful. And even those same grihasthas are thinking, you know, that now I'm old enough and it's time to wrap it up and move out of householder life. Having that discussion is. Several of my godbrothers have said that to me. What about this? What are the rules for the Vanaprastha ashram? How do you go about becoming a Vanaprastha? You know, they're serious about it, or directly thinking of taking sannyas. So there are ideal examples. You don't have to go back as far as Bhaktivinoda Thakur to find exemplary grihasthas. But for but you also don't have to go far, very far, to find so many who were struggling and, you know, if I had known, I never would have, and all of that. In any case, Brahmacharya Grihastha chant Hare Krishna. But as Prabhupada said to me, you're chanting Hare Krishna, if you're not. Mm-hmm. You can skip it. This is about Mrs. Curtin's, right? We've reached the end.
Unless someone else
I think so. Chant a little more?
Sure.
Who's the chant leader?
Yes.
Yeah.